Okay, Romans chapter 7, we're going to actually get into the best known part of chapter 7. It talks about in verses 15 and 16 and 17 that Paul has this issue. He says, "For what I'm doing, I don't understand, for I'm not practicing what I would like to do, but I'm doing the very thing I hate. But if I do the very thing I do not wish to do, I agree with the law, confessing that it is good. So now no longer am I the one doing it, but sin which indwells me." And then he's going to repeat that kind of thing again in verse 19 and 20. "The good that I wish I do not do, but I practice the very evil I do not wish. But if I'm doing the very thing I do not wish, I'm no longer the one doing it, but sin which dwells in me." So verses 19 and 20 being such a almost word-for-word repetition of verses 16 and 17 implies very strongly that it's a very important concept. And so we're going to this evening at least begin our study of the issues in verses 15 and following. And most believers identify with that. I don't practice what I would like to do. I do the things I hate. That kind of conflict, internal conflict in behavior. So we're at least going to be dealing with some things that most people are aware of. When Paul, in chapter 7 of Romans, began to move into the issues of relating properly to law, he, through this chapter, moves deeper and deeper into the issues that are involved in a life that's law-directed. And he takes pains to make sure that his readers have the opportunity to understand just how futile such a life is. A law-directed life is no life at all. In fact, the law becomes an instrument of death in the hands of the sin. And when we're free from the influences and deceptions of the sin, we really don't need the law at all. Except as a revelational tool, which was what it was designed to be. I mean, we're not advocating a deliberate ignorance of the content of the scriptures that are called law, because they have a tremendous value in terms of revelation, but they have no value in terms of life imparting ability or that kind of thing. So Paul had said earlier, the law is good, but the use of it by the sin is unspeakably evil. And given its occasion by humanity's condition as sinners, the whole idea of being sold into bondage to sin, verse 14, I am a flesh sold under sin, or sold under the sin. So we're going to look into what that means in terms of verses 15 and following tonight. He wants to explain the believer's condition if he omits the particularly intended ministry of the Spirit of God. The Holy Spirit was given on Pentecost for a very real reason. And that very real reason is because we desperately need His input in our life and experience. Just as an aside, it was interesting on Tuesday night this past week, I just asked the guys, I said, in terms of actual experiential reality, what is the difference between Jesus' statement to His disciples, the Spirit is with you, but He shall be in you? What was the difference for the disciples before Pentecost, when they could cast out demons and heal the sick and raise the dead, and after Pentecost, where the Spirit indwelt them? What's really the significant difference there? And we didn't come up with an answer. But it's kind of an interesting thing that the entire New Testament, I think, needs to be interpreted in light of Pentecost, the indwelling Spirit. Well, in this text, he says in verse 17 and 20 that there is this thing called indwelling sin. So we have an indwelling Spirit, and we have, at least as a part of our Adamic heritage, we have this thing called indwelling sin. So this is where we're headed. I think that verses 15 and following are actually an explanation of what he meant in verse 14 when he said, I'm a flesh sold under the sin. I am under the sin. The law is spiritual, but I'm not. That kind of thing. So in Paul's statement about his carnality, I am carnal, I'm of flesh, he's explaining the outworking of that. And the first thing that he explains is in verse 14. Being of flesh means being sold under the sin. Being in a condition is a sense. In the sense of being sold under it means that you are now the slave of it. So, that idea of being sold under the sin is a deliberate contrast between the nature of the law, which is spiritual, which was designed to be good. It was designed to produce life. But in its spiritual nature, it is in such contrast to my nature. He says, I am fleshly. That is my condition. It's an obvious, deliberate contrast between the law and spirituality and the flesh and its carnality or the fleshly nature. And the chief point of the contrast is that the two natures, in the sense that the law is spiritual, that's the natural condition of law, and the natural condition of man is carnal or fleshly. The contrast between those two natural states is almost completely different in terms of characteristics. I say almost because he does say in verse 18 that the wishing is present with me, the wishing to do good. And in that one point of contact, the law and the carnality they come together, because the law is designed for the good and the carnal person apparently has the ability to wish for the good. So there's a point of contact, and he actually says in verse 16 that by wishing to do the good, or by doing the very thing that he doesn't wish, he agrees with the law, that it's good. So that's why I say the two natures are almost completely different, the spiritual law and the carnal man, but do have this one point of contact. And in Romans 8, just a few verses later in our context, in verse 5, he says, those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. In other words, the fleshly man has a mindset that's fixated on the flesh. And those who are according to the Spirit, their minds are fixated on the things of the Spirit. So in chapter 8, which moves into the impact that the Spirit of God dwelling in us has, he does say the flesh and the spirit have this characteristic of a mental focus. And even in John 3, Jesus said to Nicodemus, that which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the spirit is spirit. And the implication is the two don't touch very often, or they don't connect very many points. And then, of course, in Galatians 5, verse 17, the flesh sets its desire against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, for these are in opposition to one another, so that you end up not being able to do the things that you please. So there is this contrast thing. Being under the sin means being almost inalterably opposed to the good, and that is defined in the text as life. In other words, being in the fleshly condition means that even if you want life, you're not going to get it, because you end up doing the thing you don't want to do, and you don't do the thing that you ought to do, and So that's the first issue. Being sold under sin means to be in this terrible condition of being in contrast to the Spirit, which God is a Spirit, so that those who worship Him must worship Him in spirit, and if you're not spiritual, can't do that. And then the second descriptive thing involves, in verse 15, in just one verse, Paul uses three different words for performing things. And these are descriptions of his carnality or his fleshliness. In the very first phrase, that which I am doing, that word that's translated I am doing is a word that means I am intensely involved in expending my energy to accomplish something. And then he says, I am not practicing the thing that I'm doing. I do not understand, for I am not practicing what I would like to do, but I'm doing the very thing I hate. Well, the word practicing is another word that means to do something. But this word practice is a word that has to do with a repetitious activity. And then in verse 15 at the end, I am doing the very thing I hate. That word doing is a word that simply means to do something, whether it's one time or a whole bunch of times is beside the point. It's, you do it. So that he has three different words for doing things. One of them is to expend a lot of intense energy to try to accomplish a goal. The next one is to practice to do the same thing over and over and over. This is the way I'm doing, I'm practicing this, and not practice in the sense of trying to improve, but just I'm doing it over and over and over. And then there is the third word, which is the weakest of all, I just did it. So if we went in reverse, it would be, I do this over and over and over, and I expend a lot of energy to accomplish this. Those three words are all right here in verse 15 by themselves, and they're interesting in their own light. The first word that's translated, I am doing, that which I am doing. That word is used 23 times in the New Testament. 11 of those 23 are in the book of Romans, and 6 of those 11 are in this chapter by itself. So it's apparently a fairly significant word. In fact, it's used in chapter 7 where it says in verse 13, in order that it might be shown to be sin by effecting my death. I believe that's one of the uses, and I'm relying on my memory here. But the idea is that the sin put an intense amount of effort into getting this result. In other words, the Spirit that works in the sons of the disbelief, introducing the sin into humanity, had to do a significant amount of intense, deliberate, focused labor in order to accomplish this objective. And, of course, we have the record in a very brief form in Genesis 3 of what happened there, how it happened. But the point is, it's an intensified word, and it means that you are seriously intent on accomplishing a particular objective, so serious that you will expend a lot of energy to accomplish the thing. And so the very fact that you're willing to work that hard to get this done, the emphasis is upon the diligence of that expenditure, because apparently whatever it is you want to accomplish is of high value, or you wouldn't spend that much effort. And that's what makes this statement so weird, because he says, for that which I am expending an awful lot of energy trying to achieve, I don't understand, but I'm not practicing what I would like to do. I'm doing the very thing I hate. So he is frankly admitting he doesn't understand what's driving him. He is spending a lot of energy pursuing something, and he doesn't even know what it is, if I can say it that way. He doesn't know why he's laboring so hard. And quite frankly, I don't think he's alone. I think that if you were to go to almost anybody and ask them, what do you spend the majority of your real effort to accomplish? What are you trying to accomplish with the majority effort that you're making? And then, you know, a lot of people wouldn't even be able to identify what their majority effort was. They'd say, well, I spend this much time doing this, and I spend this much time doing that, and I don't know what's the, I don't know how hard I'm working at the various things. And if you say, well, why are you working hard at any of them? Well, I don't really know. They'd start scratching their head. Well, I think there's a reason for that. It's interesting that Paul doesn't say, that which I'm doing I don't understand, so I made an appointment with my psychologist or my psychiatrist to try to figure this out. He didn't say that for a reason, and the reason is Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? And all of the psychiatrists and the psychologists think that who can know it doesn't include them, because they think they've got it all figured out. The problem is they don't. And not only do they not have it figured out for other people, they don't even have it figured out for themselves. There are an enormous number of people who are supposed to be well-trained in knowing exactly why you're working so hard to accomplish this, and their whole lives are a wreck if you just step back and look at the way they're living their lives. And the reason is because I don't think anybody really understands what he's intensively seeking to accomplish by the labor that he's giving, because that's what Paul's saying. What I'm doing, I really don't get it. I just don't get it. He used the word gnosko for I do not understand. That word actually means I just don't know. Out of my own evaluation of what I'm thinking and seeing and doing, I don't know. And he is describing humanity. in all of the efforts and everything that we do, most of us really don't stop and think or ask ourselves, why am I doing this? Or what am I trying to achieve here? I think in generalities, we kind of have an idea. I go to work so I can make a living because I've got to have money to pay the rent and buy the groceries and buy the gas and all that. But those are pretty superficial answers to the issue. There are a whole lot of people whose motivation for work really isn't even the money. There are, well, maybe not a lot, but there are at least some people who do what they do with an intensity that is driven by their own interests. I do this because I love doing it. And if you were to chase that, why do you love doing that? In a little while, you'd get down to, well, I just do. It'd be just like the illustration I used last time, the kid who keeps saying, but why? You can push that question until at some point nobody's got an answer, so they just have to shut down and say, well, that's just the way it is. And I think that Paul is admitting this. Being in bondage to the sin as an issue means that you don't know what's driving you to expend all this energy doing all these things. We have an advertiser over in Louisiana that wants to sell us a GMC pickup. He's a dealer. And his key line, you know, they always have this line that they, it's just their motto. One of the dealers says, we're making deals every day. Well, this guy's line is, I promise you, we know what drives you. And I think, that is the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. He doesn't even know me, and so he can't make me a promise. And when he says he knows what drives me, he hadn't got a clue. And yet, that's the motto of his business. And I don't know why. I don't know how his knowing what drives me means I should buy a GMC pickup from him. But the point here is, we don't know what drives a lot of the stuff that's going on. And so Paul just starts out in verse 15 by saying one of the issues of being sold under sin means that we will not understand what is really driving our most intensive labors. And then he begins to explain what that means with the statement, for I'm not practicing what the translators use the word would in italics and do in italics. I'm not practicing what I would like to do. Literally, that says, I am not practicing what I wish. The word there is, the word like in the New American Standard is the word fellow, and it refers to a wish, a desire. Now, in the scriptures, there are a couple of significant words in terms of the strength of a desire. There are desires that are real desires, but they, on a scale of values from top to bottom, the things at the top are the ones that are going to get your intense labor. And then the things that are just under that will get some of your labor if you still have some time left and energy. And then the things that are below that will get some of your effort and time if there is still effort and time left. But at some point, you're going to want some things, you're going to wish for some things that you have no time or effort or money or any resources to pursue them, so you're not going to. They're real wishes. If wishes were, you know, horses, all beggars would ride. If we could just wish and get it, we'd do it. We'd wish and get it. Because there's no real effort put out in just making a wish and getting what you want. So when he says, I am not practicing what I wish, he is saying, in effect, I have some real wishes. And yet, when I look at the way I'm acting on a repetitious system, I practice, I do this, and I do it again, and I do it again, and I do it again, and I do it again. And when I look at what I'm doing over and over and over, it is not serving my desire. I look at what I'm doing, and I look at what I desire, and never shall the twain meet. What's going on here? And that's why he's saying, I don't understand what I'm expending all my high intensive labor on, because I'm not even doing on a regular basis the things that I wish I was doing. And that word, fellow, it's even used about God in 1 Timothy 2:4. the issue of God desiring that all men be saved. Pray for those in leadership and so on, because God is willing that all men, however the text reads in 1 Timothy 2:4. But the issue there is that God is willing for something that is not, according to his own declaration, going to happen. And all that means is not that God's not really willing, but there are other overriding concerns that make it impossible for that to be a part of the actual pursuit. So you can wish for something that you'll spend no effort really chasing, because there are too many other overriding issues involved. And perhaps some of those overriding ones are mutually exclusive to this desire, so you won't pursue it. And I've used the relatively carnal illustration on multiple occasions of a person who wishes to do some evil, but because he recognizes that he's going to be destroyed by the consequences of his doing that, he'll simply say, well, I don't want to be destroyed, so I'm not going to do that. But that doesn't mean I don't really want to. It just means I've counted the cost and decided I'd rather not fulfill that wish because of the consequences that would happen to me. And we can probably all identify with the reality that there are certain things that we wish, but we're not going to chase them because there are some other things that are more. I mean, a lazy man might wish to be able to lay around in bed all day, every day, but he doesn't live in a democratic society in America where everybody will take care of him, so he has to get up and go to work. He has to, or he'll starve to death. Well, he doesn't want to starve to death. He's lazy, but he doesn't want to starve, so in spite of his laziness, he'll get up and go to work. He really would like to stay home in bed. That's just an illustration of what Paul is saying here. I have this wish, or these wishes, but when I look at what I really would like to see happen, and then I look at what I'm doing over and over and over, being sold under the sin is an enormously wrenching experience, because I find myself at odds with myself. My actions defeat my desires. And so that's one of the issues of the practice word. I'm not practicing what I wish. And then I am doing the very thing I hate. That word is just, I take this action. And it's an action that I despise. Or it's an action designed to accomplish something that I despise. And so the word hate there is it's the value term. You know, agape is the positive value, and miseo is I hate, or below the, it's the negative value. And he says, I actually despise this. It's down here below the level of all my positive values. And yet, I find myself doing this very thing. Now, if that's not an explanation of a highly twisted up person, a conflict-filled reality, I don't know what is. That is it. And yet, it's the explanation for verse 14. I am fleshly, sold under the sin. I intensely invest my interests in ways that I don't even understand. I don't do on a regular basis the thing that I really would like to see happen or do. And the very thing that I despise is the thing that I take action and pursue. So, it's a pretty sad situation. The issue of the doing is simply taking an action. It doesn't really have to do with it being typical. It's just I did this and I despise either the doing itself or the action that it automatically produced. So in terms of his own values, Paul is saying, I am one messed up person. The things I hate, I do. The things that I value, I don't practice. And it makes me aware of the fact that even my most intensive labors, I can't explain. I don't know why I do them. And then verse 16, he says, but if I really do, and this is our poieo word, the end of verse 15, if I actually take this action, if I do the very thing that I do not wish, if I contradict my own desire, I agree with the law that it is good. The implication of this statement is the wishing is a wishing to do something that's good, that the law would declare as a valid action, reveal as a valid action. That's the implication of the wishing. I wish to do the good, but I don't do the good. And by simply wishing to do it and doing the very thing that I don't wish, I agree that the law is good that says this ought to be and this ought not to be, but I'm finding that I'm doing this and wishing for that. So it's a kind of a round the neighborhood statement about how the law fits in here. I can read, he says, the law and see that it counsels these kinds of actions, and I can even see that they're desirable to do. But I don't find any ability in that description of what's good for me. I don't find any empowerment there. I see it's good. I acknowledge that it's good. I wish I could do it, but I don't. I do exactly the opposite. So his final descriptive terms that identify this issue of being under the sin is verse 17. This is my conclusion, he says. I'm not the one doing it. It is sin which is indwelling me that is doing this. So the issue of the doing, whether it's intensive, whether it's repeated, or simply a single act, he says, that's not me. This internal conflict between the values that I hold and the actions that I take, whether I take them once and over or with significant diligence, is driven by something besides me. It's not my desire that's doing that. It's not my loves or hates that is setting this up. I am doing the very thing I hate. I am not doing the very thing I love. There is something going on here that I don't understand, but I do know this. He says, that is not me. It's driven by something else. And the something else is the indwelling sin. It's the sin again. It's that combination of the definite article. The sin is indwelling me. And we have to keep in mind that all of this terminology, all this work, starting in verse 14 and down, is under the assumption that I made back when he said in verse 9, I was alive once apart from the law, but when the commandment came, the sin was resurrected and I died. I'm understanding verses 14, 15, 16, and 17 as a statement about his status without the input of the Spirit of God. This is me relating to law apart from the provision that God has made for me. This is me taking the law as a method of living rather than as a revelation of God's character and or mine. And the bottom line here is, I'm not the one who's active here. This is indwelling sin that's being active here. Now, whether I'll participate in the consequences of that depends on the connection between me and the indwelling sin. And, of course, that's what all of chapter 8 is about and what chapter 6 was about. Because in chapter 6, we were told to count on the fact that we had died to the sin and had been raised with Christ and now have a totally different foundation for behavior. But if we leave that off, if we forget chapter 6 and just go into chapter 7 and say, okay, here's how you're supposed to relate to law, you're going to find out that it's a dead-end street because you can't relate to it as an empowering mechanism. It will not empower you. It will inform you. You can even agree with it, but you're not going to be able to do it. And the reason you're not is because you have an indwelling problem. And that indwelling problem is called the sin, but it's directly tied to the Spirit that works in the sons of the disbelief and actively empowers the contradictions of life so that, I mean, unbelievers are capable of wishing they could do good things. They just can't do them. They're capable of hating vile things, but they find themselves doing them. So it's not about that. It's about the fact that there is this problem, indwelling sin. And we're going to see more about that as we go on into the text in the weeks to come. Lord willing, a couple weeks from now, I guess, we'll pick up with verse 18. But for now, I think that what we need to understand is Paul's defining being sold under sin in terms of this massive internal conflict that results in his decision that this is not me. This is sin that's indwelling me. And so I have to deal with that. And of course, he's going to go ahead and deal with it. I know that nothing good dwells in me. That is in my flesh. And from then on. But we'll get into those particulars in our next study.